Like, it's not even in the realm of
possibility. You're saying that when Tim Ballard says, because the traffickers can smell our pheromones, they'll know that we're not kinky sex fiends unless we do real husband and wife stuff. Oh, are you saying that with God, your education in sex trafficking research, you're saying sex traffickers can't smell pheromones? And they
can I say bullshit on your podcast? There's so many molesters who make up shit.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to this really important edition of the Timmy Did a What podcast. I am here in studio with the amazing Stephen Hessen. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Kara. Good to see you again.
Yeah, so I did an episode with you a couple years ago on my YouTube channel. So grateful that you're back in Salt Lake and offered to come sit down with me, talk more about your bite model and your work related to cults. And joining us from his home is my co-host, Ryan Fisher.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Stephen. Great to meet you. So excited for this conversation. It's going to be good stuff.
I'm looking forward to it.
Our podcast is kind of dedicated to Tim Ballard news right now. So today we thought that we would bring you on and talk about the Tim Ballard case and aspects of the bite model that relate to it. How does that sound?
Sounds great. I really didn't know much about Tim Ballard. I remember when Sound of Freedom was being pushed, and I contacted my sex trafficking expert friends and said, what do you think of this? And they're like, not good, not good. Don't endorse it. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't know much about it. And then I read a Salt Lake Tribune article about a federal trafficking suit happening yesterday. So I'm ignorant. Please educate me.
Yeah, so since you have an amazing audience that's followed your work for a while, and hopefully if they're tuning in to this episode, we can kind of educate as many people as possible. Because right now, Tim Ballard, he's smearing the lawyers who are trying to stand up for the women and his victims. He's smearing people like Ryan and me, people who honestly want to stand up for truth and what actually helps sex trafficking victims get out of the situations they're in and kind of expose the crimes, expose the tactics that he's used, like this thing called the couple's ruse, to manipulate and honestly sex traffic kind of like normal Mormon moms and hairstylists and actresses that he's conned into doing these operations with him, than to use them for sexual gratification.
Explaining that Ryan, who's with us, knows Tim Ballard for many years and was deeply involved in a business relationship and such. So I really want to hear from you and learn more about it. But please ask me questions too.
Yeah. As I've been deconstructing my experience being part of OUR early on, as well as being business partners with Tim and personal friends, and really dedicating, you know, probably 6 years of my life to upholding this guy and platforming him, putting him on my TV show. I'm going through this process of deconstructing what my experience. And I'm really interested to get your take on the.
I need to ask you, OUR, for listeners who don't know what that stands for, what does that stand for?
Yeah. OUR stands for Operation Underground Railroad, the name of the anti-human trafficking organization that Tim started. He was formerly working for the U.S. government Department of Homeland Security as a special agent in this field originally. He left that job to start his own nonprofit organization, which he named OUR, Operation Underground Railroad, which plays off of the understanding of the original Underground Railroad, which happened in American history early on, where slaves were conveyed from southern states to freedom. And he plays off of that sentiment in his own organizational title, Operation Underground Railroad, invoking the imagery that there are kids in sex slavery that need to be rescued and liberated and brought to freedom.
Yeah, so
that's where that started.
QAnon used a lot, referenced it a lot. Am I remembering correctly that pushing the Sound of Freedom movie that was seen by so many people, or am I misremembering?
Operation Underground Railroad was a human trafficking organization for many years, and he is the principal hero in the Sound of Freedom movie. The Sound of Freedom movie is made about him, and so yeah, you're right on. I think for our audience, what we should start with, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Kara, is doing a brief overview of the BITE model and Stephen's research there. If you could explain to us what that looks like and get our viewers up to speed on that.
So what I'd like to start with is just saying I have a model called the influence continuum, which is why I call my podcast that, which talks about influence being ethical to unethical, to kind of help people visualize that influence is all not the same, and that there are values-oriented ethical influence where you have informed consent and respect for conscience and critical thinking and respectful leadership that's responsible and accountable, and organizations that are have checks and balances and that care about people and how, do what they say they're going to do, all the way to the destructive, where they are basically brainwashing, mind controlling people to be dependent, obedient, spiritual warriors, these air quote rabbit quotes, spiritual warriors, heavenly soldiers for God, which is what when I was in the Moonies cult in the 70s, which is how I got interested in this topic, I got recruited at college into this very, very extremist fascist cult that to this day is very active in politics. Anyway, and so what I've done was after I was deprogrammed from the Moonies cult, one of the things that really helped me get out was learning about Chinese communist brainwashing. And the work of a psychiatrist named Robert J. Lifton, who wrote a book in 1961 called Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism, a Study of Brainwashing in China. In chapter 22, he has eight criteria that anyone that's doing those eight things could be said to be brainwashing people. And in my deprogramming, it was clear the Moonies did all of them, which left me confused because I believed I was doing God's will, and China was Satan. So it started opening up the door. This is all to start the explanation of the BITE model, because that was the first model, and I was like, wow. But then I learned about Margaret Singer's model called Six Conditions of Thought Reform. And as I studied more and more, I started thinking about how to better describe the actual nuts and bolts of what brainwashing was. And I read a book by Leon Festinger, who was a social psychologist, about a UFO cult called When Prophecies Fail. And he studied, Festinger studied with his students this UFO cult, and the woman said that this flying saucer was going to arrive at a mountaintop on a specific date, and she was having everyone sell their property and give her all the money. Why they would need money in a spacecraft going somewhere else, no one questioned that. But Festinger, when the date came and went and no flying saucer happened, he noticed a very strange phenomenon, which was people believed more, not less. They didn't get this illusion. And he came up with this theory that's now very, very famous, called cognitive dissonance theory. And he said that people have thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and they like to have consistency between those things in terms of their sense of identity. So if you can get people to do extreme behaviors, they almost always start rationalizing it or find an explanation for it in order to feel good about it. So I started thinking about thought control, emotional control, behavior control. Let me you know, take my experience in the Moonies and see if I can parse my experience into those three dimensions. Like, they control my sleep. They control where I live. They told me what clothing to wear, what to eat. I had to ask permission for major decisions. So I just started writing down this list. And as I met former members of Scientology and Hare Krishna and Children of God and listened to their stories, these parallels started popping out at me, that people's sleep were controlled and their clothing, and they maybe changed names and they had loaded language, which is one of Lifton's terms, is buzzwords, etc., that stop thinking. So, and then I started thinking there's something missing, and I came up with information control, because basically you can't control someone's mind without lying to them.
So just the B is for behavior, and now we're on to I, information control.
Right? Yep, then thought control and emotional control. So the four stands for bite, and on my freedomofmind.com website under learn, you can literally download the influence continuum graphic for free in color if you want, if you have a color printer, and the bite model, all of the criteria. And I should say that I added criteria when I started studying terrorist groups, and I started working with trafficking victims who would kidnap and beat and torture and brand and threaten to kill. So I added more extreme things than what I personally experienced in the Moonies and most of the other cults that I did, to make it a little bit more complete. But the idea is, the more of the BITE variables, the worse the group or the more authoritarian the group is. And I'm actually working on a website and an app, because the model itself has like 132 variables. Wow. Not all of which happened in each group, but
yeah,
we identified the 10 most important factors of BITE. So we're going to offer a 40 question anonymous, so nobody's tracking you, nobody knows you're taking it, but you just fill out never to always these questions, and it will give you a number on the influence continuum, how authoritarian it is.
Because it's a spectrum.
Study in the next few weeks.
That's going to help so many people. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's super important. It's I love how you identify that it's a spectrum. You know, people always ask the question, is this religion or is this group a cult? Is Star Wars a cult? You know, and the definitive answer is hard to pin down, because there's a spectrum, and you've laid out things on a spectrum that things are trending more towards authoritarianism and less towards self-control and things like that. And so it's so useful for
exactly everybody. And I say there are cults that are healthy cults, that people know what they're getting into. They're sports fans, or they love a certain band, or I'm a scuba diver. Like, I can sit down with any stranger anywhere in the world and talk fish. Human beings are meant to be social. We're meant to be in groups, families, communities. Like, and I'm for religious experience. I just think religion should be about love and honesty and integrity, lifting people up, and not about dogma and doctrine and fear and control, and making the leaders who are malignant narcissists wealthy. And I came to the realization the law itself has to be updated, because it's about 100 years out of date with understanding social psychology, neuroscience. You know, right now the law just says if you're a minor, you can be unduly influenced. If you're an elderly person with dementia, you can be unduly influenced. But everything else in the middle is a slippery slope. And I say BS. We can delineate very clearly. And it's not all or nothing. It's a continuum. So, but the point is trafficking has been made an international crime. Fraud, force, or coercion. So over these 8 years, I've not only helped to co-develop endingthegame.com, which is a 10-session program for women who have been sex trafficked to understand pimp mind control. Mm-hmm. Because wow. When young women were taken into custody by police, they'd go back to the pimp 12 to 14 times because yep. They were so programmed against the police and programmed to be dependent. So this program ends the game. The game is what pimps call it. So anyway, I'm at this forensic think tank, and one of the professors said, you need to go do a doctorate, and you need to do a quantitative study on your bite model and show that it's scientific. Mm-hmm. Which I said, I'm too old. I'm 63 at the time. And he said, I'm 77. Do you want to change the law, don't you? If you do this, I'll supervise your research.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the way the law views it, once somebody turns 18, they're an autonomous, independent thinking person, and all of a sudden they aren't expected to be controlled in the way that minor or elderly or somebody with dementia is. However, what you're pointing out and what I'm so appreciative of is that there's coercion and control and manipulation that can happen at any age. And that needs to be reflected in our culture, in our understanding. And a great example of this that we just witnessed is somebody, Kira Lynch, who went to a protective order hearing to try and get a protective order against Tim Ballard. She was denied that protective order. She's one of the women that have accused him of rape and sexual assault. She was denied that protective order because the judge said that her statements are inconsistent and that if she was going to claim that she was raped, then she should have come out right away. Why did it take her weeks or months before she came forward with what she knows? And I think if the judge would have been familiar with your work, that judge would have seen that there is a multiple layers of manipulation and influence on these victims that prevent them from coming forward in what would seem like an expedient manner. And
well said, my friend. You nailed it. And I'm going to interrupt for 1 second and just say, we know with neuroscience, the brain doesn't fully mature till 25 or 26, not 18. So even 18 is too young because we need a frontal cortex that gives us the ability to make decisions, to look at data and evaluate things and not go off of just emotions or impulsivity, which is what immature brains do. But this is expert witness work that I do, is to explain to judges, juries, and arbitrators, or help the lawyers that hire me to explain how hypnosis works, what happens when you're sleep deprived, you know, to explain all of these granular details that comprise a systematic social influence or brainwashing regime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so important, so needed. And I can't wait to explain to you some of the situations that me and Kara have been privy to with the Tim Ballard scenario, to highlight some of the patterns that may or may not be present in your bite model.
Labor trafficking experts and sex trafficking experts love my bite model. And now that I have a doctoral dissertation and I literally include a law professor emeritus, Alan Shefflin, social influence model that he created explicitly for judges and juries to explain, Your Honor, this is the influencee and their unique vulnerabilities or susceptibilities. This is the influencer or predator or predatory organization, and describing malignant narcissism, for example, and the purpose, the techniques, the timing, the consequences of this undue influence relationship, because it's predator and prey is the way to explain it to judges and juries. And so, and a part of how the legal system works is you have to tell a coherent story that makes sense, that the fact, the data fits the story. And so we look at people who are drawn into mind control cults, if they're not born into them, which is the largest number, they're situationally vulnerable. Maybe they had a death in their family or friend or illness or lost the job or graduated or got divorced or moved to a new city, state, or country that made them more susceptible to the appeals of the recruiter who lie to them. And lying takes three forms in the BITE model: overt lying, withholding vital information, or distorting information to make it more palatable. So we're explaining how this process works in a step-by-step way. And we need more people to get data on specific groups so that we can write scholarly journal articles, because that's the other thing that judges are looking for, is how many people in the scientific community, and mine is psychology, think this model is it works. So we need people testing the model and challenging the model. It's already been challenged once by a Boston University professor and it held up, but it needs to demonstrate this works, and it needs to be made codified into law.
Yeah. So when you were talking about the predator and the prey and kind of adding more data to this model.
Yeah, that seems like a very productive exercise for anybody that's been through a sexual assault or has an abuser to go through. That's probably one of the first steps they should probably go through to deconstruct what they've been doing. I know, like in the case of Celeste Boris, one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit who was abused by Tim Ballard, she got to a point where she wasn't sure what was happening to her. She knew she was being controlled, and she turned over her personal information and her phone, and she just gave that to police. And she's like, I don't know what's happening to me. Here's my phone. Here's all these text messages. Here's what's this person is communicating to me. Please tell me what's happening. And if law enforcement had the tools like that you've provided, they would be able to sift through that data and information and make more sense of what's happening. So
yeah, no, totally, exactly. And there are people I've helped who've come out of QAnon that have the documentation of how which videos were used to indoctrinate them step by step deeper into the rabbit hole.
Yeah, well, that's a great segue into introducing Tim Ballard and his hero status as seen today. I'll give you a brief summary on where that originated. So Tim became founder of Operation Underground Railroad, an anti-human trafficking organization that advocated for rescuing kids from sex slavery, mostly in third world countries, is where he operated. And he would raise money for his organization to do this very thing. Now, he's an interesting person because he did more than just that. He is a very religious person, and he wrote many books about his religious ideology, which is known as the American Covenant. A simple version of it is America is a very special land, a promised land. And if we are unrighteous on this land, then the wrath of God will come down and he'll destroy us. Then he used evidence of that religious dogma in the historical record with things like the Civil War, and claimed that the Civil War was the wrath of God that came down upon Americans for the sin of slavery and the sin of persecuting minorities. And if we don't right the wrongs of unrighteousness in our country, then a similar kind of wrath of God event will happen to us. He became very popular in Mormon circles, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, with that message. It's not a unique message, but he took it to a whole nother level by incorporating American history into that message as proof of his religious beliefs. He became number one author in with his book series. He got the endorsement of high-ranking church officials, and all of that was influenced his success in becoming an anti-trafficking hero in his own organization. Mm-hmm. So this religious message combined with the message that we need to right the wrongs, save these kids, or the wrath of God will come up, down upon us, was a message that resonated with people both on a societal level. Yeah, we got to save kids. But also it validated their own personal religious convictions in a way that not many people had. And he gained a following very, very quickly. I was one of those people that jumped on the bandwagon of his message and promoted it on TV for like 6 years. And so he became a religious figure first, a religious, spiritual figure first. Now, within his organization, he had subordinates that he brought into this organization that saw him as this religious figure, almost like a prophet. Mm-hmm. And he reinforced that by making claims of receiving revelation for God about them, that God chose these people to be part of his organization. And he would reach out to attractive women that were his hairdressers or several stylists, and say, "Hey, I've received a revelation from God that God's chosen you to be a partner for me in my organization."
Mm-hmm.
And because
that's familiar, I may add,
studying yeah,
cults for 48 years, this is not a new pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That I am a prophet, God speaks to me, and oh, by the way, God told me you need to mm-hmm. drop out of college and join me.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your money. Break yeah. off from your family and friends because they're satanic if they don't support it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly another message that was prevalent through his interactions with his subordinates. Is that, and he's touting this today, even this weekend on Instagram, that anybody that opposes him or attacks his credibility is working for Satan, is part of the adversary, or is working for the cartels and pedophiles of the world, that he's conflated his personal ambitions with a righteous cause of God. And anybody that steps in that way or criticizes them must be working for Satan, the adversary, against God.
Right. So if I can add, so under the T of the bite model, which is thought control, what I write about is that the ideology is black and white, us versus them, good versus evil. Mm-hmm. And there always has to be an opponent or Satan or demons or some enemy that's going to help make people afraid, but also make them feel more cohesive, that we need to work together mm-hmm. to combat this evil. So it's a very, very common pattern. I might cite the 1954 book, The True Believer by Eric Hoffer, who was writing actually about communism at the time. But he said that the strength of a mass movement, he didn't use the word cult, he talked about them as mass movements. It's criticizing communism. He said the strength of a mass movement can be measured by its vividness and tangibility of its devil.
Hmm.
So the more real you can make evil and the devil, the more you can get people to really sacrifice, mm-hmm. give over their money, donate their time, etc. Mm-hmm. And E of the bite model is phobia indoctrination. So mm-hmm. it's the implantation of irrational fears. That if you question the leader, you're questioning God. Or if you think about exiting the group, you're exiting God and your life's going to fall apart. You're going to be possessed by Satan, or you'll become a drug addict or want to mm-hmm. kill yourself or something. Mm-hmm. This is another universal mind control technique that these cult leaders use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the ways that Tim has reinforced the fear mongering or inflated the threat of the devil, as like you stated, is to associate with QAnon. And the actor that played Tim in the movie Sound of Freedom, which grossed $250 million at the box office, 100 million people saw it. That actor, Jim Caviezel, is a QAnon conspiracy theorist that has gone on multiple interviews to reinforce that fear. And even
I didn't know that. You taught me something just now that's significant.
Big adrenochrome guy.
And I did a bite model analysis of QAnon. That's on my Substack, by the way.
Yeah,
there's a big Venn diagram between.
Yeah, I'm bringing in like our worlds kind of collide, or they cross over in this way.
Well, QAnon was a psyop, just to state it categorically. I've studied it in great depth.
By CIA, DHS?
No, actually, it's a Russian psyop, actually.
Oh, that would make sense.
And Michael Flynn, unfortunately, was involved at the very, very
really?
Beginning. I have a scholar friend who has a company that has the ability to filter Twitter, what is now X, and we go back to the first tweet that mentions QAnon, and where really? And we can literally track who was amplifying and figure out a lot about it.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. I didn't know that. I learned something about QAnon today. But getting back to your bite model, and what you're saying is Tim used QAnon and the proliferation of that combined with the Jeffrey Epstein scandal as proof that there is a secret cabal of government pedophiles that are abusing children, and he is the sole savior that can take them down.
Yeah, and I'm not saying there could be any day. Look at what happened with Pete. I have no idea what the freak is going on. I just know that Tim Ballard and his tactics, he's not the one who should be qualified as the savior, where the money should be funneling into him, his tactics, his ways being higher than, you know, experts in the actual anti-sex trafficking field. But continue.
Yeah. So, it seems to fit the pattern that you've identified very closely. What he did, I'd also like to dive into a little bit, a personal aspect of this story with the women that that have accused him of sexual assault. Because once you understand the persona of Tim and this hero-like status that he has, he rose in the ranks all the way up to, he was an advisor in the Trump administration, the first Trump administration, for anti-human trafficking efforts. And he was viewed by many people as the face of the opposition to human trafficking, as an American hero, and as in the case of Mormon circles, as a religious hero. And then within his own organization, he was receiving revelation and guidance from God, and his rapid rise to celebrityship seemed proof. And he reiterated multiple times, this is proof that God is on our side, that God has taken our cause as his cause, and, starts using very religious language. And one of the questions, you know, I get interviewed and asked a lot about, OUR and their origins and things like that. And people see it on the front as an anti-human trafficking organization that's out rescuing kids. That's what OUR is. That's a mission statement. But if you're on the inside and know the people on the inside, like myself, you see that it's a religious organization first. It's built on these religious principles that elevate Tim as the savior of not only the nation, but possibly mankind. And that is what's paramount. And everything functions from that, you know, cohesive message. Mm-hmm. And so people brought into the organization have to be believers in this Messiah figure of Tim Ballard first. And mm-hmm. once he has an organization of people that believe that he is this kind of Messiah figure, then he's in a position of power and leverage over them and can get them to do things that under normal circumstances, they would never even consider doing or allowing to happen on their watch.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense to me. And what you told me about the guy who played Tim Ballard in the movie being QAnon is very, very interesting. I didn't know that. That definitely opens up a lot of alarm bells.
Yeah, it's such an interesting case study. And as I've gotten to know, and I have friends and know people that were part of QAnon or believed in it and followed it. And it was interesting to me, some of the research that I've read on it, where they identified that QAnon is primarily made up of middle-aged white females, that they're the predominant demographic from this one research paper that I read about it. And it makes sense, because if it's even possibly true that there is a secret cabal of pedophiles in our government that are going after kids, that are abusing children and harming them, that would definitely elicit a fight or flight reaction from middle-aged moms that have, you know, kids, or that are sensible, like feeling emotional people. And they would have to, they would react in that way where they'd say, okay, there's no way this could be true, but what if it is? And then they start looking into it. They start reading all these posts and getting on these internet forums and going on Telegram. And it elicits this fear response in them. Like, I have to figure out if this is true. I have to know if my kids or my nieces and nephews are in danger. And so they devoted the most amount of time to researching this and finding these reinforcing echo chambers to that take news headlines to put them in a state of fear.
Yeah. And so there's a thing about human mind that we are pattern making beings. Mm-hmm. And we also don't like to be confused. We like to have things make sense in a coherent way. And that's where simplified all or nothing, good versus evil. Look, there are children being trafficked and put in. By the way, I have an interview with Lila Micklewaite, who wrote a book. She took down Pornhub that was showing all this explicit real footage of minors being raped and tortured and beaten and stuff. And she's got a legitimate nonprofit. If anyone's listening to this, check her out. She's actually doing what she says she's doing.
Yeah, very interesting. This is such important work. One thing that I'd like to get your thoughts on is, so now you know a little bit about Tim Ballard and the cult-like apparatus that he set up with himself as a cult leader, both a religious and spiritual leader, in addition to being the boss. And he brought in subordinates and executive assistants from different social statuses than himself, people that weren't famous, that weren't hero status. And he'd do that in a way where he'd say that, I had a revelation that God chose you to be my assistant, or God revealed to me that you need to be a part of it, or that you'll be play an important role. And he would have this reinforced by one of his close associates, is a woman named Janet Russin, who is a self-proclaimed psychic who receives revelation and from God and can channel spirits on the other side. She would reinforce his claims by also going to these women and saying that God has chosen you, that you are going to play a huge role in the second coming of Jesus Christ, from building the kingdom of God. And so he would surround himself with these visionary psychic type people. I have met and associated with one of them, and I know her. And Janet is another one. Another one is a man named Tom Harrison, who wrote a book called Visions of Glory, which is an apocalyptic prophetic view of the destruction of America in the last days. And when I was associated with Tim really early on, Tim told me that the author of this book and the subject of this book, Tom Harrison, came to him and he gave him this vision that Tim is supposed to play a huge role in ushering the second coming of Jesus Christ. And when all these destructions happen prior to that, the pedophiles that are enslaving kids are all going to be destroyed, and that we need to create an apparatus or for an institution for taking in tens of thousands of children that are going to be liberated when these apocalyptic events happen in the near future. And so Tim took that to mean that he needed OUR to prepare for this apocalyptic event. And I see that this Tom Harrison figure, who was revered in Mormon culture, extremist parts of Mormon culture because of his book, used that spiritual and religious manipulation in his position of prophet status to influence Tim. And then Tim is using that same kind of MO and behavior to get the adherence and loyalty and reverence from his followers. And it just, it goes down this line of prophet worshiping or reverence or enamoration that is all based on these religious principles. And I think that's probably pretty consistent with your bite model.
Yeah. And it's a victimizer. Someone gets victimized and then they learn to victimize others. It reinforces their indoctrination to recruit and indoctrinate others.
One thing that I kind of wanted to add to that is when you're talking about the bite model and you say information control, I do think of Janet Russin and the psychic quite a bit, because it was only in the last year with these different documents finally coming out and these criminal cases coming out that it was finally revealed that while Tim Ballard is doing all of this badass work in Haiti and around the world doing these operations, that it was a closely guarded secret, basically, that his main source of intel of where this child is, where the sex traffickers are, was Janet Russin, this personal psychic.
Oh, she was getting messages.
Exactly. And so millions of dollars being raised to do these
operations. That's amazing. Well, that, again,
at least with that perspective.
So the thing is that I can tell you of thousands of cults I've worked with where somebody had psychic magical abilities. My former cult leader, Sun Myung Moon, claimed he could read minds and know everything about your history and your future. He would line up thousands of Moony men and women and say, you and you, you and you, and you would marry a total stranger, mm-hmm. even if you didn't speak the same language, because the Messiah knew everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell you story after story about how people, because the certainty of the cult leader saying, God gave me a message. Mm-hmm. And I'll point out one other Lifton criteria. It's called mystical manipulation. Remember, a 1961 book he wrote about Chinese communist brainwashing, mystical manipulation. What was that? They would have spies in the cells find out information about people, pass it to the leaders, and then the leaders wouldn't say, oh, we found out from the person in your cell, but we learned, you know, or they didn't use God language, but they presented themselves as mystical, and people were like, they know everything. I can't hide. But it was just information being passed around. And that's how a lot of these mentalists do their performances, is they gather data on people. Then it's justified to lie, to steal, to cheat.
Yeah. On that same note, like within OUR, Tim will say a lot that, like, you know, we're not doing this by the way that the world would have us do it. We're doing it by the spirit. Like Ryan explained, that it's like fundamentally basically a religious organization first. And so if you're upholding this ideal that we are doing the most noble thing imaginable, which is saving kids from a life of rape and torture, who wouldn't want to be on board with that? But the means to rescue those kids is something that is so ineffective. like the psychic being the sole like arbiter of truth and where the kids are located. There's just a lot of stories internally of, you know, operators who are putting their life on the line and then saying, hold up, wait a second, who said that a psychic is that really what we're going with? That's where we get our intelligence from. And like I think Ryan also explained that if people are not on board with that type of system within OUR, they're basically kicked out, because it's Tim's spiritual prophesying as the best way to do it. And if you're not with the program, those people get moved off to the
But side. He's not announcing ahead of time that that's his methodology.
Right.
If no one would give him money.
Yeah. And that's a fascinating part of the last year, is this being revealed that that is where so much of these millions of dollars have gone, that this psychic was getting paid
six figures. Yeah.
Produced basically no information and no children being rescued.
Well, forensic accounting will be good.
Yeah.
We track the money, follow the money.
Yeah. And one of the other strategies that's been implemented that I think aligns with your Mooney experience is that Tim would tell the women that he brought into his organization that that he or his psychic Janet had a revelation that they were married in a previous life, that the woman and Tim were married in a previous life. And
only that one 50,000 times.
Yeah. And this is a direct doctrine that comes from this Tom Harrison figure. But that was a way for Tim to circumvent the religious and sexually moral position of the women, who were most of them were very devout Christians. But if he can convince them that God revealed to him that they were married in a previous life, then engaging with him sexually is not a sin because, you know, they've already been that. And he would say things in text messages like, yeah, when we're together, then it'll feel new, but it won't feel new because we've already been together in a previous life.
Well, that sounds like a hypnotic suggestion. And we can talk about hypnosis in great detail, but the power of suggestion is very strong.
Mm-hmm. Especially like when they're willing to be suggested on anything, if it means like I am chosen by God to do something as special as save kids from sex trafficking, like who's gonna deny that person telling them that like no, I'm not that person, or what you're doing is too skeezy. People want to believe that they do have a special,
they want to believe, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he was grooming them, which is a standard technique for traffickers. Anyone who knows anything about trafficking victims knows the techniques in detail.
Boundaries, seeing what they're comfortable with. And again, all of this like sexuality is kind of all within this idea about the couple's ruse that Tim purported that it's this amazing technique that came to him. It was all sanctioned by one of the top church leaders, M. Russell Ballard. He signed off that they would sign this little contract as long as there's, you know, no kissing and like no touching private parts, that you're all good to go. But he needed to build this chemistry between him and his female attractive couple through his partners so that they look like kinky sex fiends, so that they could block for each other when going into sex parlors, get the intel and get out of there. But along the way, Tim was grooming them. The text message evidence is really quite obvious at this point of what he was doing to groom them into thinking this is a like an eternal
type
of situation, and anything we do here is actually sanctioned by God. We're doing it to save the kids. You're a previous wife of mine. My psychic said it was okay. And along the way, a lot of women got hurt, molested, taken advantage of, and literally themselves be sex trafficked by Ballard for his own.
Yeah, and just there's no legitimate person who fights trafficking that would think any of this would be legitimate. Like, it's not even in the realm of possibility.
You're saying that when Tim Ballard says we have to do tantric yoga or tantric massages, I mean, together, because the traffickers can smell our pheromones. They'll know that we're not kinky sex fiends unless we do real husband and wife stuff. Oh, are you saying that with God, your education in sex trafficking research, you're saying sex traffickers can't smell pheromones? And they
can I say bullshit on your podcast? Like, give me.
Yeah, it's never wrong
enough. There's so many molesters who make up shit. Like, I need to do this because you were raped as a child and it's going to liberate you. Or, you know, I'm not, you know, penetrating you. This is, you know, this is not what's happening. What's happening is energetic freedom is out. You know, all these stories that are just.
Well, you want to hear Tim's latest excuse? He's saying that, well, when he's on undercover missions looking for kids, he's playing the persona of a person named Brian Black. And so when we see all this evidence of grooming, of sexually explicit messages, of him making advances on women and stuff, he's like, all of that is my undercover persona. It's not me. It's like, I have to talk dirty because we're playing roles and we're practicing for being sex tourists. And have you heard that excuse before?
Yes, I'm afraid I have, not in the context of trafficking, but in terms of playing roles, for sure. You know, the Al-Qaeda 9/11 bombers went to pornography places and sex places and stuff because they had to make sure that the authorities didn't believe they were religious, you know, fanatics. It's like, give me a break, please. Yeah.
Tim Ballard had to get lap dances in strip clubs on a regular basis to make sure that they existed, and that's where people were doing
things. My former cult leader had to go to Las Vegas and gamble and spend huge amounts of money in order to save America.
Yeah, there is this interesting angle that I just love studying, like the cult leader aspect of Tim Ballard, and just kind of seeing the pattern has really been fascinating, and just the ways that, like with your research and your work and all the stories that you're telling. And I hope that through everything that we're saying, kind of to wrap this up, is that I know that some of Tim Ballard's victims will, you know, listen to this podcast maybe one day. And I always just want them to like take heart at how much we like love and understand and can understand and sympathize with what they've been through, because while they have like their own unique circumstances, that there's something, you know, about our human psyche that is just so controllable with all of these different aspects, and not to feel stupid or feel bad that they were put in this position, but it is just a predator and prey situation that a lot of us fall into. And
when you're mind controlled, you're made to feel like anything bad is your fault. Automatic. It's never the leader, the doctrine, or the policy of the group. Mm-hmm. It's your lack of commitment. You're not praying hard enough. You're not fasting. You're not this. You're not that. You have allowing doubt, and Satan has entered you because you're allowing a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're having an actual thought. This is not feeling good. Why is he doing this to me?
Yeah.
But that's labeled as evil spirits.
Yeah. Yeah. And he on one occasion where he sexually assaulted one of the women, he found her later in a bathroom crying. And he said, because of what you did, I was able to get so much intel from the prostitutes or the massage, the erotic massagers that they're working with. Because of what you did, many kids are going to be saved. And that trauma that you just experienced that I inflicted on you, it's all for a good purpose. And he deflects from his personal crimes to try and get her to focus on the greater good and the good that's going to come from this. And that's a pattern that we see throughout so many cases of half a dozen women, and probably a lot more.
Yeah. And the opposite is also true, that when some women would be like, I am not okay with this, like in Sasha's case of feeling like she was about to be in a situation where she was going to be literally like raped by somebody in a massage parlor, and her not doing exactly what Tim wanted her to do and having a panic attack, or, you know, story after story where women are trying to go into these really skeezy places after just getting off of an airplane because they live in Draper, Utah, and they're used to being actresses and not kinky sex tourists. Like, it's such a fish out of water situation to begin with, and are not able to do what Tim needs them to do. Tim punishes them and says, well, we would have gotten so many kids if you wouldn't have done what you did, and you didn't perform the way I needed you to do, and then guilt them into it. And then, you know, they want to just perform more and try harder to live up to his expectations. And yeah, so the reverse is also really sad and true. But at the end, it's still this cult leader mentality where Tim is always the right one. He's doing it the right way. It's, you know, other people who are just needing to follow his authority, but he's the one arbiter of.
Yeah. So what you're doing is very important and very valuable to unpack the techniques, the methodology. And again, it's like we need to have experts who actually know trafficking to listen to this methodology and hear from them to say, this is totally made up, you know, ridiculous, absurd justifications, rationalizations. The whole thing about being married in a past life, what makes me want to throw up, to be honest. I've heard that so many times. I did a case with an eye surgeon, a medical doctor, and it turned out that he walked out on 12 patients who were requiring surgery on a particular day and drove to Las Vegas and married one of his employees. And the family was like, this is so totally not like him. If he was interested in marrying a person, he would have introduced her to us, and on and on and on. Long story short, I learned that she was hypnotizing him while she was having sex and saying we were married in a past life, and installing that belief in his head. And he married this woman. It was a successful intervention, but it jumped into my memory when you were telling me about the past.
Wow. And that's a doctor, somebody that's a very smart person. That's a very respected member of the community, probably.
Educated, responsible, would never, ever, ever. But we're all human. We can fall in love, think somebody loves us when they're just using us and grooming us and manipulating us and giving us stories. And there are more vulnerable moments where we're in a hypnotic trance state where we're not critically thinking. And it can be a prayer. In the Moonies, the cult would do audible prayers. You know, I don't know if in that group they did it, but we would literally be, if I may, dear God, please look over Kara, because Kara has so many issues, and we're going to, and for an hour or two, and Kara's like, I want to go home. I don't want to go to the next workshop. But by the end, she's ready to sign up for the next Mooney workshop.
Wow.
And when I got out and learned hypnosis, I'm like, that was not prayer. That was like programming.
Programming.
Altered state programming.
Yeah. Yeah. Prayers were definitely used in that way on stage at these fundraisers. Prayer was used in that way.
Yeah. So this would be interesting if their video examples, you can show them to me, and then I could comment on it.
Yeah. Well, there is one video that I would love to get your talk. I know your time is very valuable. We don't want to keep you up late. If we could get your reaction to one video that was just posted yesterday. Kara, do you think you could bring up rant that Tim just did yesterday in which he threatened all of us that are in his opposition and you invoked very religious language? Play that. Get Stephen's reaction to that, and I think that'd be a great way to wrap up this discussion. Conflating his opposition with working for the devil and his cause as being the righteous cause of God, and identifying everybody that's opposed to him or criticizing him as somebody worthy of having a millstone hung around their neck and drowned in the depths of the sea.
This is going to be a net positive in the end when everything's exposed. And I think in the end, more kids will be saved. But the Sound of Freedom guys who are kind of watching this and helping me with the kids, they're like, holy cow, do you realize we're this content's making the script for Sound of Freedom 3? And I only say that because it's going to be a good thing because more kids will be saved because of what I've been through. And that's my testimony. I believe that the gospel's true. The Lord is God, and he cares about kids. Better than a millstone be hung about your neck than you mess with these kids. That's what he said. Powerful, violent, righteous, violent words. And we're seeing that now be exposed and come forward. So thank you for those who've supported me. Those of you who didn't have a backbone, I hope that you get one. Those of you who chose political expediency over integrity, I hope you do the, and I can name names that I'm not going to right now, but I hope you now do the honest thing, the journalistically honest, the godly honest and righteous thing. As you start seeing this truth come, and your pride will be buried, and that you will stand with those who are fighting to rescue God's children. Thank you.
That's right. All right.
So
that was directed at all of his accusers. He's telling us that he's going to release some information on Monday that is going to prove that everybody that is working against him is part of a pedophile ring or working for the cartels. And you see a religious leader there, right? Yes. Yeah.
I'm not holding my breath that there's any proof. I think he's just mouthing off.
Yeah, but what does he come across to you as?
Not much, to be honest. This is the first time I've seen a clip of him speaking. I'd say he's scared, is the vibe I got from him. by no means do I feel threatened by him.
He has a problem with alcohol, I've heard, and shits his pants on a regular basis. So I'm not scared of him either.
Yeah. No, it's you know, people who are guilty will rant and rave about how that they're misunderstood and every, you know, people with bad intentions and no integrity. It's a technique of projecting their own bad behavior onto their perceived enemies to distract, deflect attention. And instead of like looking at his own behavior and how he should act.
Yeah.
That's well said. I wish you were his dad and could give him that speech.
Well, I'm it's nice to meet you. Thank you for speaking out and sharing your expertise. And so you're going to write a book, or like we should, you know, I know you're doing this podcast, yeah, which is great.
That needs to happen. Docuseries need to happen. Multiple podcasts need to happen. Lots of journalism inquiries we're fielding. We're just trying to get this message out wherever we can to whoever we can. And so, yeah, but a book along the lines of what you've written sounds very appropriate and fitting. So,
yeah, and there's a lot of people who've been taken by this guy, who donated to him, who watched the movie, and they, you know, that's why I think you need to do a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And connect the dots, mm-hmm, for people. This is what you thought you were doing. This is what they said, and this is the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that reality is that all of his accusers are former OUR insiders, personal friends and business associates and employees of his. However, that doesn't dissuade his followers from believing them, which is what's so fascinating to me. After, from that video in that comment section, there are people that are calling, you know, picking up his rhetoric about righteous violence and saying, we need to kill them all, kill all these people that are working for Satan and supporting this pedophile ring.
Well, this has been illuminating. Stephen Hassan here in the house on the Timmy Did What podcast, talking about Tim Ballard and all of the things that make a cult leader so successful at cult leading. Obviously, we love your support any way that you can to help get out this message. If you can like this video, leave a comment below. The Timmy Did What podcast is available on all of the streaming platforms. We have a Patreon where we share exclusive behind the scenes content. Please. I have a 501c3 nonprofit, so anything to my donor box is tax deductible in the United States. So we would love to get any more monthly donations that we possibly can through Venmo, Patreon, donor box. And Ryan, you're amazing. Thanks for being my co-host.
Yeah, thanks for talking with us, Stephen. It's been, I hope this isn't the last time we get to speak. It's been...
No, yeah, I'm going to invite you on my podcast in the future, and continued success.
And please tell our audience one more time where they can find more of your work and your books. And
oh, thanks. Yeah, so freedomofmind.com. I have a Substack. I have a YouTube channel. I have a podcast called The Influence Continuum. And I've written Combating Cult Mind Control. It first came out in 1988, and I did a very serious updated version. Freedom of Mind, How to Help Loved Ones and Friends and Families to Leave a Controlling Person, Cult, or Belief. And, if I may, The Cult of Trump.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. You're doing humanity a great service. Thank you.
I agree, man. There's actually one more thing I wanted to ask you, Stephen.
Timmy Did What?
You'll have to find out next time on another episode of Timmy Did What.